Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
If you're snacking on anything but tasty cake, you're making a huge Miss Cake. A fistful of chocolate-covered raisins? Miss Cake. A spoonful of peanut butter? Bigger Miss Cake. Or the worst Miss Cake of all, your kid's Halloween candy, and it's April. If it's not tasty cake, it's a Miss Cake. Because nothing satisfies like a perfectly sweet butterscotch crimpet or rich and creamy chocolate peanut butter candy cake. Tasty cake. Accept no substitutes.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the co-director of charts at Billboard. Joining me, as always, is Billboard.com senior editor Katie Atkinson. Hello, Katie.
Oh, hey, Keith.
How are you?
You know, doing well.
I am super stoked because today on the show we've got Coming Around Again, and it's all about The Simpsons.
Okay, we'll stop now.
Yeah, I know. You'll hear more about that in just a second, because the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop.
Today on the show, as we mentioned, we've got Coming Around Again with Billboard.com senior associate editor Andrew Unterberger. Andrew will be discussing the 30th anniversary of The Simpsons premiering as part of The Tracey Ullman Show. Andrew will be joined by Pitchfork and Spin writer Ian Cohen, and the guys will also be talking about their favorite Simpsons songs, musical moments on the show, and diving headfirst into a discussion about the rock star-filled Homer Palooza episode. So stay tuned for all that in just a few moments.
But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on iTunes so you won't miss an episode, and give us a rating or review while you're at it. If you have any questions for us, feel free to tweet us at Keith_Caulfield or KT Atkinson. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit iTunes.com/Billboard Podcasts. So, I love The Simpsons.
Yes, same.
I think it would be appropriate if I gave you a special Simpsons chart stat of the week.
Hit me.
Or chart stat of the day. It's not of the week, because we've got more than one episode now. We just got chart stats coming out the wazoo. Did you know that The Simpsons had a top five charting album on the Billboard 200 chart?
Did not know that.
Well, it was The Simpsons Sing the Blues, and it featured hit songs like Do the Bart Man and Deep, Deep Trouble, and it peaked at number three for 1 week back in January of 1991. But you may be wondering, what blocked the animated family from getting a number one album?
Well, since I know I was 9 years old when this all went down and I owned that album, it's going to definitely be some music that is dear to my childhood.
You were nine.
Yeah.
Wow.
And loved The Simpsons. Obsessed.
Well, that week at number one, Vanilla Ice to the Extreme was number one.
Yes.
And Madonna's The Immaculate Collection was number two.
Owned so. Both of those as well.
Oh, really?
So I was just really in pop culture at age nine.
You were very young and hip with the pop thing.
Indeed.
Well, we'll hear even more about The Simpsons in just a moment, because
it's time for Coming Around Again.
Can I borrow a feeling? Could you lend me a jar of love?
Hello, and welcome to Coming Around Again, the still relatively new Billboard podcast dealing with music-related anniversaries. I'm Andrew Unterberger. I'm a writer-editor for Billboard, and today we're going to be talking about the 30th anniversary of The Simpsons. It's a little bit of a cheap anniversary, kind of. It's not the 30th anniversary of the show proper, but it's the 30th anniversary of its debut on the Tracy Ullman Show, which was like a variety show that debuted on Fox. It was an important show for them back in 1987. But it's enough of an excuse to talk about one of the greatest TV shows of all time. And to help us do that, we've got a writer for Spin, Pitchfork, a whole bunch of other places, Ian Cohen. What's up, Ian?
How's it going, man?
Yeah, going all right. So I wanted to talk to you specifically because, the intersection of rock critic and Simpsons obsessed is certainly not, it's not a rare one, but I'd say you're pretty squarely in the middle of it. As I even remember once when I was writing for Spin, I was writing a review of the Beach Slang album, and I wanted to get my review up before I knew you were going to be writing about it for Pitchfork because I made one Simpsons reference in it, and I was positive there was at least like a 50% chance that you were going to make the exact same reference.
Yeah, I mean, when you're my age, like, I'm 37 years old, so that means, I came of age, like, right during the core of The Simpsons, where it, like, started to kind of transcend from the cartoon to, like, this cultural monolith that has probably influenced my life more than anything, really, just my perspective, so... it's an honor to be that person, even though, to grow up in the 90s and be kind of a suburban smartass meant that, you gravitated towards The Simpsons. So I'm certainly not alone, but I'm glad you made the call for me.
Yeah, for sure. And this is actually one of the first things I wanted to talk about. I kind of had a theory, and you can tell me if you sort of agree with it, which is that, for people... we're about the same age, but we at least both kind of came up, or at least would say we came up in the 90s, and... I would say for people of our age that the Simpsons are basically the closest thing we had to the Beatles, and I don't mean that in like a cultural impact way. The Simpsons were incredibly important to television and to comedy and to animation and all that, but they didn't really have the same kind of, they didn't change the culture the way the Beatles did. But what they do have in common with the Beatles is that they have this just unbelievable back catalog. They have like this massive, deep and amazing like text to refer to, and like just as how there's really not such a thing as a Beatles deep cut. You can talk to somebody from the 60s, or even somebody just raised by somebody from the 60s, and you talk to them about a song like Revolution 9, which is an obscure experimental song on side 4 of the White Album. They'll know it, and they'll recognize references to lyrics, and they'll recognize just the sort of general concept of the song. And it's the same sort of thing with The Simpsons. There's no such thing as an obscure Simpsons reference, at least, from the first 10 seasons. You talk to somebody our age, you can make just like a kind of an offhand, just kind of an allusion to something. Just before coming on today, I had purchased a package of honey roasted peanuts. I'm sure I could have said something, honey roasted peanuts, ingredients.
And my immediate laughter knows where you realize that I know exactly what you're talking about.
Exactly, and it's probably the first thing you would think of with honey roasted peanuts, and the first thing that anybody that you and I would kind of concern with would generally think of when they think of that. So, does that make sense to you? Do you think that kind of lines up?
Yeah, I mean, then we're going to spend the next 30 minutes trying to figure out what the Simpsons equivalent of like Bungalow Bill is, why don't we do it in the road?
Yeah, sure.
But I think that's I guess that's true in the sense that first off, people of a certain age defend the Simpsons as the zenith of pop culture in the same way like people from baby boomer generation might see the Beatles as like the platonic ideal of like what a rock band could accomplish or any sort of musician can accomplish. And likewise, I mean, I think the Simpsons has that effect as well. Now, I mean, the major difference is that unlike the Beatles, the Simpsons kept going. And then,
that's the major hole in the theory, certainly.
Yeah, this is now we're getting whatever the Simpsons answer to like Flaming Pie is or whatever. after a while, the Paul McCartney Wings album was pretty good or whatever. But, the Beatles certainly make sense for me. I mean, it's just such a, everything, just like politically speaking, or just like a style of humor, or like vocabulary, or the referential humor. I mean, everything can kind of go back to that. And you can certainly tell a certain kind of perspective from someone who was raised by The Simpsons. I mean, I just really, even though I was watching it throughout high school, I got to like really immerse myself in the minutiae of it. I wish I could re-experience it, like what it was like to see like the monorail episode for like the first time. I mean, or like any of those for the first time. So
yeah, it's almost impossible to remember, you know, life before The Simpsons or what it was like to exist in a world where this wasn't kind of, you know, the iconic text for our generation. And it's just...
Because, I mean, you see, like, the way, like, you know, like, TV is talked about today or what, I mean, you know, we didn't, you know, TV wasn't talked about in the same degree, like, the same widespread media circulation. So, I mean, it was, like, around, I mean, it was on Fox, obviously, but, I mean, just the fact that so many people have this shared experience of like quoting, not just like seeing, like watching a football game, but like seeing it and quoting it and having the same like throwaway lines just somehow circulate through every like middle school and high school. It's something that just seems impossible to replicate, you know, similar to the Beatles, I guess, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And obviously there's, you know, a million different things we could talk about when talking about The Simpsons and The Simpsons legacy, but this is a Billboard podcast, so we're mostly going to talk about music. And you know, The Simpsons, I would say they're very casually innovative in the way they used music. You know, they used a combination of, they would use pre-existing songs, you know, pop songs, for, I guess, mostly from the animator's youth. But they would also mix in, you know, their own original songs and parodies of other, you know, pre-existing pop songs and show tunes and stuff like that. And they wouldn't necessarily need a reason to throw them in there. You know, there were musical episodes, like entirely musical episodes, and those were great too. But it wouldn't be uncommon to just have, you know, an episode where all of a sudden the entire cast is together in the scene and they would break out into song together. That's kind of one of the things you sort of take for granted about The Simpsons almost, is that you don't even really think about it until you realize, like, well, you know, I guess not a lot of other shows were doing that at the time. And a number of them have started doing it since. I would say probably not as well as The Simpsons did.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about The Simpsons that stands out to me is like how, I mean, the fact that it's animated gave it a lot more freedom than most shows at the time. Animated TV shows, I mean, they existed to a degree, but not, they weren't either, like, it just gave them, it allowed them to take more chances to, like, play with non sequitur. And I mean, and the thing that's amazing to me, and I think we're going to talk about this later, is just when you look at the loyalty of, like, who's the most famous musician, like, from the 90s or, you know, like, leading up to, like, 1998, didn't appear on The Simpsons? I mean, like, maybe, like, Led Zeppelin or something.
Yeah.
Like that. I mean, like, every living Beatle, like, U2, Prince, Michael Jackson, I mean, it's dumbfounding, like, how they were able to pull this off.
Yeah, I mean, when you get 3 out of 4 Beatles and the other one's not around to show up, I think that's a pretty good get. Yeah. It's a pretty good sign of where you're at in the culture. Yeah, for sure. And so, as you alluded to, yeah, we got a couple lists that I asked you to prepare, and I prepared them myself, that we're going to kind of run through. We're going to talk about our favorite songs from the series, and then we're going to talk about our favorite musician cameos on the series. And we're going to share a couple songs that maybe we, you know, pre-existing songs that we can't not associate with The Simpsons. And then we're going to close it by talking about Homer Palooza, which is certainly one of my favorite episodes. I'm going to guess that it's one of yours too.
Yeah, I mean, we could like, when I was told, like, yeah, don't put Homer Palooza on these lists, I mean, like, it took away a lot, but it's like, yeah, that's like its own universe. That's like existing as a separate season where it exists like almost separate just because of like the musical guest and like the capturing of the zeitgeist that is bad. I've never said zeitgeist aloud. that's like all like a term used as like a music writer, but like you never say it aloud.
Sure.
Yeah.
So we'll talk, you know, a whole lot more about that later. It's probably, you know, if not the best music themed Simpsons episode, it's certainly one of them. But why don't we start off with our best songs list? So you go first, Ian. Tell me what you had as your number 5.
Okay. I mean, when I think about the best songs on The Simpsons, like I wonder whether it had to be a complete song, because there are just like some snippets that have stood out to me more than most. You know, for example, like I've heard it number five, and this is not a complete song, but it's when the B sharps, you know, not the AD on board, but like the song they're trying to make about like
the ever coop, right? For all the latest medical poop.
For whatever reason, that one just like stands out to me as like a nice metaphor for just like a tired ass band trying to, you know, squeeze out songs that, you know, and not starting to realize it's over. And that one stuck with me just as like, like anytime I hear a band that is clearly gassed and do not like each other, it's like, yeah, that's a Beaver song right there.
That is an obscure choice, Ian, even by Simpsons standards, at least. That is not one that I would have predicted here on your list, but it's a good one. And I would say that if you were to come up with another episode that would kind of rival Homer Palooza as like kind of the ultimate music theme Simpsons episode, it would be the B Sharps episode. I think it's called Homer's Barbershop Quartet. And there's, you know, any number of songs you could choose from that too. But it's a good call. It's a good one to start us off with.
Yeah, I mean, that one's up there. The second is much more like a regular song. It's the Slanderous Mambo.
Okay.
I don't even remember the song, but it's just like the ridiculousness of the things that like the Simpsons were about that you know, few other shows could accomplish. You know, like having like Tito Puente brain for murder, and then like and then just like play, like, I don't know, like, how did I know who Tito Puente was?
I had no clue.
You know, a 15-year-old, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, this guy's actually like a very important figure. So, just the way it's like utilizing the plot of one of the most important episodes, has made it just like, and also a slanderous mambo.
Like, can't go wrong with a slanderous like, mambo.
Yeah. Number three song, and this one I'm sure is on most lists. It's the Monorail song. And it's like one of the episodes that's considered, you know, just one of the best of all time. That itself warrants inclusion of that one. Number two, now this is also a song that's not a song, but it's from one of my favorite gags in the entire, like, of all time. It's when Homer sings the Max Power song to himself. I guess in like the style of Goldfinger, I think. But it's just like one of the perfectly ridiculous moments that comes along, like towards the later part of the good.
Sure. And
where like Homer first, he comes up with a name and he sings a song about himself and just like kind of ad-libbing it. And I don't know. I would have loved to have just like been there for like the creation of it.
I don't have that. I didn't consider that one on my list, but I did give strong consideration to the Scorpio theme, like the closing Scorpio theme.
Oh yeah,
which is also very Bond-esque.
Yeah, and number one, of course, and I imagine this is like kind of a chalk pick, is the Dr. Seuss song.
Okay.
From Rock Me Amadeus, you know, like I ate every chimp I see. And yeah, like, I love you, Dr. Seuss. And it's one of those things that Simpsons created that is just its own universe. Like, you almost forget what episode it was from or how it was integrated into the plot. It just taken on this incredible life of its own, and just evidence of its genius at work right there. Like, it's not like totally like overthought or winking. It's just hit that perfect spot of referentiality and like ridiculousness and like cleverness, but not like arch. It to me is like everything a Simpsons original song could achieve, especially when and also like in terms of pop culture influence as well. So those are my top five honorable mentions. If we're gonna paint our wagon song,
okay.
The one where the Springfield riff, where like Martin Milhouse drink the loaded squishy, and the mediocre president songs were like kind of the others receiving birth.
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of trivia questions right in my time because of the mediocre president song. It's a good resource to have. So it's probably another one of the ultimate testaments to just like what a rich, song catalog the show has. That I don't think I had any of the same top five as you did. Although I do love Dr. Zaius, and I do sometimes just randomly start laughing thinking about From Chimpanzee A to Chimpanzee. That's an all timer. For number five, I did like kind of cheat and put a tie. I put a tie between the monorail song, which you had on your list, and We Put the Spring in Springfield, which are kind of like those are the two best examples to me of the kind of two like full cast numbers that you sometimes see in The Simpsons, where like there'll just be a ridiculous scenario, like half the town wants to bulldoze the whorehouse, and so everyone has to come and either support them or fight them, and the cast just bursts out into song, and the Simpsons do that as well as anybody, and I'm not sure if anybody even did it before them. So number four I had on my list was one I'm actually surprised that you didn't rep for, which is We Do from the Stonecutters episode, which is, I'm not even sure if it's supposed to be a parody or something. I mean, obviously it's about the Stonecutters, which are this kind of Freemasons group that Homer joins in a one-off episode, and it involves them taking credit for aliens and for Steve Guttenberg's illustrious acting career, and it's a very clever and memorable song. Number three, I had Talking Softball from Homer at the Bat. Which was
that was definitely in consideration for mine. Well,
yeah, that's a great one. That's the parody of Talking Baseball by Terry Cashman. Plays over the end credits after Homer's team wins the pennant. And quick shout out to Jeff Martin, who wrote that song, or at least wrote the lyrics to it. Whose daughter Sam Martin I used to work with at a site called Pop Dust, and is a very, very funny woman, and clearly got it from her parents. And number two, an all-timer, Can I Borrow a Feeling from Millhouse Divided.
Oh, crap! You know what? That was on my list, and I'm looking at it right now, and it was crossed out.
Too little, too late, Ian, but it's my number two. Great kind of soft rock parody sung by Kirk Van Houten. Hurtin' Hearts need some Healing is certainly like an all-time great terrible Simpsons lyric, and just the sax riff, it's timeless. And number one is a song that isn't really funny, but it has like an emotional resonance with me like no other song from the series does, which is Happy Birthday Lisa from the Stark Raving Homer, which is was famous for Michael Jackson appearing in it. He didn't sing the song, apparently, because he was only cleared to do the speaking parts of the episode, and then there was a whole big thing about how he performed under an alias anyway, and there were a number of issues with, licensing or just clearing his name or whatever. But they got a good, very good Michael Jackson impersonator to do it, and it's a song sung from Bart to Lisa about, her birthday's coming up, and he doesn't get her a present, but he gets her the song, and it's this incredibly moving song, kind of child's innocence, expression of joy and love from a brother to a sister, which, actually growing up, I wasn't allowed to watch The Simpsons for a couple of years because my parents were afraid that my brother and I would somehow, the relationship between Bart and Lisa would somehow rub off on us, and they saw that as a very negative influence. I'm still not quite sure where that came from, and certainly moments like this, which are very touching, and it's certainly not the only one between Bart and Lisa. But it shows, the songs were often really funny for the show, but they could be incredibly powerful too.
I think that's a good point about the emotional. Most of mine were just the completely random half songs, the Guided by Voices version. I think that's the completest one, where there's a full song and they would show up on a soundtrack. But I think that just once again proves the depth. And I do like your pick for number one. I mean, there are some songs from The Simpsons, Who Needs the Quickie Mart, for example, that and just so many episodes that have this really gutting emotional resonance to them. Can I Borrow a Feeling? I mean, that too is just if you're caught a certain way.
It cuts.
Funny. It's God, we've all been there.
It's certainly true.
Yeah,
I saw a pace list of the 40 best best Simpsons songs from last year, I think. Not to talk shit on Paste or anything, but number 38 for Happy Birthday, Lisa. What are you doing, Paste? That's just inexcusable. And before we move on, I do want to give a quick shout out to O Streetcar, the entirety of the O Streetcar production.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah. Hard to choose just one song from that, but I'm Just a Simple Paperboy, New Orleans, which was apparently very controversial in its time. I didn't realize until reading up on that recently, but that was the Simpsons musical recreation of A Streetcar Named Desire, which is such a random thing to do in an episode, but they did it so well, and the songs I certainly heard those songs well before I ever saw A Streetcar Named Desire, and watching the movie for the first time. You know, all you can do is just think about how it lines up with those ridiculous Simpsons songs.
Yeah, I mean, and also we can throw on there, When I Was 17.
For sure.
That was kind of like a crossover between like a Simpsons original and like a song that I discovered in the Simpsons. But it's almost impossible. Like, if you hear a song that was interpolated by the Simpsons, it's almost impossible to remove it from that context.
Very true. Before we move on to the guest appearances, I do want to ask you quickly about a song that I'm very not surprised that either of us didn't pick, and partly because I don't think it was actually ever in an episode, but it does kind of exist outside of The Simpsons in a way that
I know what you're about to say.
In a way that I personally don't really relate to because I was a little bit too young when it came out. But do you have any strong feelings about "Do the Bartman"?
I knew it. I knew you were going to say that, and if you really want to do the comparison of The Simpsons being into the Beatles. I mean,
sure.
That's like sort of like the Beatlemania version where you're just like merchandising everything. And I don't remember, I mean, I remember Do the Bartman. I almost have very distinct memories of seeing it premiere after a Simpsons episode, the same way that Joey Lawrence tried to launch his solo.
The live action Bart, Joey Lawrence.
But fuck, here we are. But it's almost like something you have to apologize for in a sense, because like it's so like I don't think it's meant to be funny. I think it's like I'm trying to even remember what its actual purpose was.
Yeah,
there's an entire CD based on that, right?
Yeah, I think there was a CD, like a compilation of like a couple originals. There was also Deep Deep Trouble, which was co-produced by DJ Jazzy Jeff. Sort of sign of the times there. And I think most of this, the album was called, I'm blanking on it now, I'll look it up later, but it was a compilation that had like a couple of those originals and a bunch of like the Simpsons singing like, I don't know, blues and soul standards, I guess. I've never heard it. To be honest, I'm not even sure that I've ever actually even heard Do the Bartman all the way through. Like, I get the gist of it, and I feel like I'm good with that.
Yeah, because I'm pretty certain it was like, to the degree it could be, it was like state-of-the-art 1989, like the Ninja Turtle rap.
Sure.
Even beyond like what it says about the Simpsons being kind of like craftily merchandised in that time, it's like just such an artifact from what rap was sort of doing at the time.
Yeah, dark days for everybody. And that album was in fact called The Simpsons Sing the Blues. I don't think it's probably not available anywhere. Actually, the sad thing is that there are a couple really good Simpsons compilations, Songs in the Key of Springfield and Go Simpsonic with the Simpsons, both of which, I owned when I was younger, and I probably knew a lot of the songs, especially from Songs in the Key of Springfield, which came out first. I knew a lot of the songs from that. I knew all the words to them before I ever actually saw them in their proper context. And they're not really available on Spotify or I don't think any of the major streaming services, which is kind of a bummer, but I guess it just means you have to actually go back and watch the episodes. So moving on, we're going to talk about our favorite guest stars, favorite music-related guest stars on The Simpsons. Before we get into the list, Ian, do you know who the first ever musical guest was on The Simpsons?
You see, I got my ass handed to me at Simpsons Trivia and this is where my true colors start to show, so...
It was Tony Bennett and Dancing Homer, the Capital City episode.
Oh, yeah.
Which I wouldn't have gotten either, for the record. And as a matter of fact, I remember, like, you know, in New York, there are a couple Simpsons trivia, you know, kind of outings that happened regularly at bars around the city. And I remember I told my parents that I went to one once. And they were like, oh, man, you love that show. You must have, like, absolutely cleaned up there. And I was like, no. But by Simpsons standards, I'm, like, average at best. I haven't watched in a while, and I only really know the first 10 seasons. And, like, the fact that I really was an obsessive fan of the show growing up. You know, I had, like, you know, the guidebook to it that I read so much that the pages fell out of the binding, stuff like that.
Yeah,
but that leaves me in, like, I don't know, the top 30% maybe. Like, it's really not exceptional.
Yeah, man, it's like that. That was such a going to a Simpsons trivia night, such an eye-opening experience.
It really is.
Like, on some level, sort of comforting. there's like some times where I ask myself, like, man, like, how deep am I in that? And then you find out that there are people whose, like, depths of knowledge is so much more deep than mine. And it's kind of amazing, like, you know, how much deeper we can get into this. But also, like, you go to a trivia night and they ask anything from season, like, 13 on, and just, like, whatever.
Yeah.
It requires a time investment that I just don't have access to now that, like, you know, I'm not, like, eighth grade anymore.
Yeah, the one that I went to has a very hard line, like, season 10 and earlier policy, and then say anything after that, yeah, God bless. All right, so moving on to our list of favorite musicians to appear on The Simpsons. Ian, why don't you go first?
Okay, so this one was really difficult because, you know, there are very iconic, you know, appearances. But once again, similar to the previous list, sometimes I take, put in some guys who, you know, have kind of minor roles, but I just love the way they were utilized.
Sure.
And so that's going to make my tie for number five, Barry White and James Taylor. one playing with type and one playing against type.
But like both making zoological appearances, or at least appearing to deal with zoological problems.
Yeah, that's interesting. And James Taylor just, James Taylor, like, someone who is so on the present in, you know, life, like, what do you know about James Taylor? And just the fact that he allowed himself to, like, play against type and be made fun of, and you know, also, like, one of the best episodes ever, so those two are just random examples of, like, what the could do, which is just, like, get a cameo for, like, a huge joke that completely changed the trajectory of the episode and, you know, just become their own sort of thing. So, number four, and this pains me to say it now because, like, you know, the way the trajectory of his own career was Kid Rock.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, that, like, I just... to play this arrange, that's a good song.
With Joe C, too, right?
What's that?
With Joe C in tow, right?
Yeah, Joe C, that's exactly, and that's, and Joe got, you know, less than power for Joe C. That's one of the good memories I have of, like, late 90s Simpsons. I just think it's, like, one of the most ridiculous, like, concepts for an episode before it got, like, way too random. And just finding, like, you know, having Homer singing along with Ball of the Paw and Joe C getting, like, good jokes in it. It's one that's, like, stuck with me to the point where I can't barely remember anything else from the episode except Marge saying, take him off the glass.
Forgot about that part.
Number three, in my opinion, one of the most underrated episodes since of all time, and perhaps, like, the last truly great one, in my opinion, was InSync.
Okay.
The Party Posse episode is just, like, so implausible, but just beautiful in the way it was executed. executed, and just like and just the way they utilized Justin Timberlake at the time of Blur, and the way they all dance in tandem, it was just like the perfect, like, I guess the Simpsons writers even recognized just how much personality each of the, like, members of NSYNC had, you know, like, they were wanting to get them rather than the Backstreet Boys or whatever. It's an episode that's, like, one of my favorites and one of the most quotable, and it really is legitimized by having NSYNC on it, so you can remember exactly why they felt the need to have a boy band episode.
For sure, yeah.
Number two, and I'll be shocked if this isn't on your list, is the Red Hot Chili Peppers. One of my favorite bits of trivia about this, this was when it was like right between they were switching from John Frusciante to like Dave Navarro, so they had, I believe, Ari Marshall in there, and this guy was like barely in the Red Hot Chili Peppers at all, but he got to be on the Simpsons episode.
I did not know that one. That's news to me. I don't think I'd ever paid attention to like who the guitarist is in there with Flea and Anthony Kiedis.
Well, if you had a 1 hot minute sandwiches look like I did, you might have paid attention.
Fair enough.
But yeah, it's, that one is just like, wow, like no way. There's the arguments about like how they're gonna like alter Give It Away. It's like a reminder of like how many bands like were on The Simpsons and like had a sense of humor and just became completely humorless going forward.
Yeah, no one could have foreseen the Stadium Arcadium era from "Forget You Clown." Songs are like our children.
Wow, everyone can enjoy that. And my number one, I think this is kind of cheating because of the common thread and the fact they're not even a real band, is Spinal Tap.
Okay, they were an honorable mention for me. I wasn't sure whether to go with them or not.
God, just every, and like it's kind of cheating because I mean, it's a lot of the humor with the musical guest comes from like their reading of the line. You know, specifically like Billy Corgan. That one, you know, comes to mind. But just, you know, in Spinal Tap, like they're comedian and you know they probably write their own jokes. But yeah, it's like what. The radio interview itself.
Well, yeah, two things about the Spinal Tap appearance, which I agree with is a great one, even if kind of off the beaten path for what we're talking about here. One is that I love that they're treated like a real band. Then that sort of like,
yeah.
You know, the fact that they're a fictional band, and The Simpsons is a fictional universe. It makes sense that they would be treated as if they're a real band, even though you know it's not a shared fictional universe, obviously.
Yeah.
I also love that they just die at the end of the episode, that their tour bus, I think, or whatever, the car they're traveling in just blows up, and that's not dealt with at all. I don't remember how it happens, but I just remember that they're talking, oh, yeah, good show last night, and then all of a sudden their bus blows up, and that's never dealt with again. All right, so once again, our lists are basically completely different. My number five... was a tie between Red Hot Chili Peppers and Bette Midler, also from the Krusty Gets Cancelled episode. You know, Bette Midler, who apparently needed, you know, it was a requirement in her contract that her like anti-littering program get airtime, which is why they have her as this like Terminator-esque superhero, like avenging littering alongside the highways. That was a very good, you know, playing against type sort of cameo. Playing into type more so is my number four, which was Sting and the "We're Sending All Our Love Down the Well" episode.
That's another great example of someone who's completely like humorless outside the context.
Yeah, for sure, and I love that they have him in the undershirt with the suspenders as well. It's an iconic Sting look. Number three, a little surprised you didn't have this too, which was the Ramones doing the Happy Birthday song to Mr. Burns.
How was that not on either of our top five? God.
Yeah, and that one was you know, that was probably a lot of kids our age introduction to the Ramones, or at least you know this is the song that you first associate with them. They do this kind of punk version of Happy Birthday, and they tell Mr. Burns, "Go to hell, you old bastard." And you know, it's like I don't think it's on any Ramones Greatest Hits albums, or it really should be.
And also, we got like have the Rolling Stones.
All right. We would be remiss to go any further without mentioning "Have the Rolling Stones Killed" for sure. And I wonder if they knew at the time that they would one day have the Rolling Stones on the show themselves. But clearly they didn't take it personally. So two, I got to have a Beatle. I went with George Harrison, mostly for the reasons you mentioned for James Taylor and Barry White, where it's just like, you know, it's not a throwaway appearance necessarily, but it's definitely like a significantly underplayed appearance. You know, he shows up in the Bouchard's episode, which is obviously a Beatles tribute to begin with. And, you know, he says hi to Homer, and Homer immediately, like, you know, he latches onto the fact that he's eating a brownie and he wants to know where he got the brownie from. And that's basically the entirety of the George Harrison cameo, aside from at the end where he shows up to comment on their, like, Let It Be, like, stadium or rather the Moe's rooftop performance. So that was great. That was a great kind of wasted legend there. Number one, talking about bands that, you know, lost their sense of humor almost immediately afterwards, you got to talk about U2. And the trash. And the Trash the Titans episode, Homer goes, or he goes to infiltrate a U2 concert to launch his own plan for garbage commissioner. And not only is Bono like willing to like cede the stage to him because he thinks, you know, he's talking about waste management, man, that affects the whole damn planet. But he also like he knows who Homer's rival garbage commissioner is, Ray Patterson. He's like, I hear Ray Patterson's a fine garbage commissioner. Forgive my terrible Irish accent there, but. You know, I thought that was just a brilliant like self-parody for U2, and you know it was a fun era of U2. It was like the Pop Mart era, and he's wearing the Fly T-shirt, and I just have very fond memories of that. And that was towards the end of you know, I remember like a couple seasons after that they had REM on there, and REM like didn't quite work. So usually the bands on The Simpsons work the best when they can kind of either play like super into type or play super against type, but REM doesn't really have like a cartoonish type the way some of these other bands do, and so that was kind of an awkward one. But U2, I thought was one of the all timers. So that's my number one.
One I wish I paid more attention to when they were on was Fish.
I don't even remember that. When were Fish on?
Fish was on. I think it was like an episode in the early 2000s where like I believe this is try to legal. Springfield tried to legalize marijuana, and then like, there's like some like anti-media act or something. Like Hans Molman says, I had to hear Fish, and just that one line like that stuck in my head, makes me wish I had paid more attention to it. But if you actually look at the chronology, I mean, apparently Blink-182 was on The Simpsons once. Do you know this?
I think maybe I saw it in doing research for this, but yeah, it's. You know, every year or so, every couple of years, you get that temptation to go back and be like, oh, maybe, you know, you've judged it too harshly. You shouldn't judge, you know, the last 20 seasons against the first 10 seasons. Or, you know, maybe that just the writing staffs have turned over so many times that maybe like this new writing staff is going to be closer to the classic Simpsons. And I honestly don't know if it's me or if it's the show or if it's just too much time has passed. Or what, but like every time I do it, I'm almost always disappointed. I don't know about you, but like every time I try to dip back in, I always like am reminded of why I stayed away in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's kind of a bummer, but you know, the 10 seasons, obviously, it's enough. Like,
I just wonder if there's going to be like someone here in this podcast who's like super serious about like season 22 and just like call out a bunch of posers.
And I hope so, man. I hope there's a reason why the show's still on the air. Presumably there's still people out there watching it, so I it would almost be kind of comforting if it was just an age thing, and if like people 25 and under are just like, what are you talking about, like The Simpsons are good as now as they ever been. Or but I feel like people like that, they're not even watching The Simpsons, they're watching you know, I guess probably not even South Park anymore, but like first they were watching South Park and Family Guy and even Futurama. You know, you get the people who say that Futurama's better than The Simpsons. This is becoming very old man ranty, so let's move on at this point. And why don't you talk to us about a couple of songs that you associate with The Simpsons, Ian?
Okay, so some of these songs were, there's kind of a permeability between the first list we did and this one, because some of them I learned them through The Simpsons because they were, you know, somewhat altered. The first is like one of my favorite, like throwaway gags is like Hey There Georgie Girl.
For sure, The Seekers, yeah.
Yeah, and you just see like Homer like holding up people like making up his own song like Hey There the people, like, and he starts crying. it you know, I it was funnier when I thought he made it like made a makes it almost even better, because like it was just like the ability to like think, oh yeah, Blippi Boy,
yeah, like who pitches that in the writer's room? Who says, oh yeah, that's a great idea? Like it's crazy, but it, you know, it obviously leaves an impression 25 some years later.
The next song is the one by the Archies, Sugar Sugar.
Okay.
It's just a great like a great moment in the series where another incredible episode where they go on the camping trip, the junior campers, and Homer's singing that song to himself, like he's dancing with like the lot and like tape blows out or whatever. That was a song that like once again I thought like it wasn't a real song, and then you find out it was, and then like you just kind of realize that Homer Simpson himself might have been like some trivia nerd back in the day, no different than us. Number three, another throwaway gag, but this is how I found out. I found out about Cheap Trick in The Simpsons.
Dream Police, sure.
Like, I prefer Cheap Trick, but there's the part where like Apu is cleaning his car, like washing his car and singing along to Dream Police. And it's just like a great. This is how I imagine Cheap Trick being in that time, where you're just like a shirtless guy, like washing your firebird or whatever. It's like, then he gets back into like a poo mode, saying, you know, can I spray you, Blakely spray you with this hose? And then he sprays Bart like terribly. Number two, this one's just. I can't think about this one without laughing. It starts Tighten Up by Archie Gomes.
Right, yes. Good call.
It's just all these seem to be Homer Simpson just getting off into his own reverie. And he's a one-man band and gets just buzz off Giuseppe. And I also like Flash, like Tighten Up, I also, because, you know, got sampled later on by the Goatee. So that song itself, I don't even know if I've heard the original, but every other context I've heard, and it just brings me so much, joy.
Well, so that is like a very good song, Tighten Up by Archie Bell, but they did a really good job of when they dipped into like those late 60s kind of bubblegummy or just sort of forgotten like pop classics. They did a good job of picking kind of weird idiosyncratic pop songs that kind of fit well when taken out of context and put in this totally bizarre context. They had a good musical supervisor for that.
And the number one song I found out about Booth Simpson, oh god, this is kind of cheating because it's in the context of, I just realized it's in the context of Honkalooza, so I apologize, but it's Mississippi Queen, only because it goes into, like, first off, it's like, what is more, like, I mean, what it is like the, like, Stairway to Heaven of butt rock, or whatever you want to call it. Like, it is just every single, like, aspect put into this. Like, I mean, I just like to make the joke, like, whenever you read something about, like, Joe Biden, it's like, yeah, Mississippi Queen is always playing in his head. It's just, like, this kind of, like, badass song that is just completely and utterly, like, late 70s, early, like, you know, late 60s, early 70s, just straight up like classic rock, and you know, then it gets into the classic rant where like Homer apparently goes all four, all four like members like Grand Funk or whatever.
Sure.
But that's a different band. It's just like Mississippi Queen. That God, that
yeah, that was a good choice.
Just to show Homer out of touch, I think it's fantastic. Even okay, so it's kind of cheating, but anyway.
That's fine, and we'll certainly talk more about all things Grand Funk later. But so yeah, I'm not going to spend too much time on mine. I'll just kind of mention two sort of strains of song that The Simpsons kind of went back to a bunch of times, and none of which I had known like ahead of time. One of which is the musical Hair. Like they had like three separate songs. They had, you know, the song Hair for when Marge is starting to lose her hair in the Sherry Bobbins episode. They have a Good Morning Starshine by Oliver, which is the one where Mr. Burns is, they think he's an alien and he emerges with this green glow and he sings the song. And The Age of Aquarius, I don't even remember where they used that one, but all three of them come from the musical Hair. I don't know if some, you know, someone in the writing staff must have had the Cast album. Maybe it was just a big thing from the late 60s, but I certainly didn't know any of that at the time. And the other kind of big strain is Frank Sinatra. They got, you know, South of the Border in the Camp Krusty episode, Summer Wind after Martin gets pantsed in the one with the swimming pool. That's a classic. And as you mentioned earlier, It Was a Very Good Beer, their parody of It Was a Very Good Year, which it's a very funny parody of a very, very sad song. But I certainly knew the parody before I knew the sad song. So that's all great. And so, yeah, at last we arrive at Homerpalooza. This is obviously one of the best episodes of The Simpsons, and it's one of the funniest episodes of The Simpsons. But as you kind of alluded to earlier, the older you get, it stops being so funny. It kind of gets sad and real and just very, very true about the sort of feeling of growing up as a music fan. And, you know, things are changing around you, but you're not necessarily changing yourself. And just kind of the impact that can have on your psyche. So Ian, why don't you? I'm just going to let you loose. Why don't you go in on Homerpalooza for a minute?
Homerpalooza. It's cliche. Like what to be said? But you think about the fact that it had both the Smashing Pumpkins and Sonic Youth, which in retrospect they were very diametrically opposed bands. I'm pretty sure, like, you know, Billy Corgan had beef with them because, you know, Sonic Youth thought they, like, Smashing Pumpkins were a bunch of posers.
Sure.
Cypress Hill. And it's so crazy to think about, like, how prescient that episode was, because, I mean, like, Lollapalooza, for the most part, the only festival that I can really remember from that time. I mean, obviously there were other ones, but as far as America goes, just the way it kind of predicted, like, the price gouging of festivals and
sure.
Just the rise of it, it's like, there's a certain kind of poignance in there, but it's also just it's so weird that, like, all of a sudden, like, for one episode, like, Bart and Lisa and Bill have, like, cool music.
It's true, they never really explained that.
They kind of, like, played fast and loose with that, but, the Smashing Pumpkins, like, probably would have been number one on my list had they been eligible. It's just such a great, playing both sides of, like, that you're saying, it's like, you know, one three cooling beat, like, girl, we try to make a difference. Like, God, I don't know how many times that's, like, that phrase been integrated in my life. It's just an example of the way that the Simpsons, like, knew how to, like, let the bands go. But, like, I mean, also, like, Peter Frampton in there as well.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Peter Frampton, certainly.
All right. So, yeah, but to me, it's just it's almost hard to talk about because it's so brilliant, and yet there's, like, this real emotional sort of undercurrent. It's, you know, the one you talked about was, like, the same thing as, like, Beach Line, you know, that's where you quoted it, and it's, like, with theirs, it's, like, it's funny, and, you know, it's fun to talk about with your friends and all that, but at the same time, it's also an episode about, like, aging, and, you know, I used to be with it, then they changed what it was, and now what I'm with is, I mean, fuck, man, like,
yeah, it's pretty perfect, and I guess we probably should have done this at the top of this segment, but for anybody who is listening and hasn't seen this episode, it's basically The Simpsons' take on the mid-90s alternative rock festival Lollapalooza. Homer ends up taking Bart and Lisa and Milhouse, and he's kind of aghast at how much the culture has changed since he was a music fan when he was back in the 70s. And, you know, he ends up actually joining the festival as a freak show side act, but he tries to relate more to his kids. And it's all about how kind of how hard it is to kind of cross the generations when it comes to rock music and when it comes to being cool and with it, as you said earlier. And I think my favorite line in this episode is after Homer goes to the CD store for the first time in decades, and it's changed names. It used to be Good Vibrations, now it's Suicide Notes. And he has this very kind of sobering conversation with the record store clerk. And as he's walking out, he laments to nobody in particular. Like, I don't understand. What's going on with the kids these days? Everybody knows that rock achieves perfection in 1974. It's a scientific fact. And, using 1974 specifically, that was the year that, was in between albums by Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd and Bruce Springsteen and some other acts. It is, I would say, probably close to universally agreed upon as the critical nadir for rock music of that era, and the fact that they placed Homer so squarely in that mindset is just perfect. You talked about the guests and they're all great. I think the four Hullabalooza acts that they have on the lineup are Smashing Pumpkins, Sonic Youth, Cypress Hill, and Peter Frampton. And as I said earlier, I do want to kind of go off on Peter Frampton for a minute, because I can't think of a single 70s classic rock figure that would have been less likely to appear on a Lollapalooza type festival than Peter Frampton. And apparently they wanted to get Bob Dylan. They maybe tried to get Neil Young too. And eight people said no, and eventually they got Peter Frampton. But I don't know who it should have been. You mentioned Cheap Trick earlier. I was looking it up, and apparently they were actually on the 1996 Lollapalooza lineup. So maybe that would have been the direction to go in. But even with that, it's so many classic lines, so many classic moments, and I'd say it's probably the episode that I end up quoting the most in my day-to-day life.
That's good to be right about music. So.
that certainly helps. Yeah, but so many different lines apply to so many different situations, and it's a great episode. Yeah. And if somehow you've listened this far in the podcast and you haven't seen it, you got to go out and watch that. Find track it down. Do whatever you got to do.
Jesus Christ, man! Do that if you can. Before you listen to anything we have to say, we should really put a disclaimer at the beginning of it. don't listen to us until you've seen all 10 first 10 seasons.
Yeah, definitely. And hopefully the youth of America that are currently lionizing seasons 21 to 30 of The Simpsons and never even seen the first 10 seasons at this point, they can go back and rediscover what we initially fell in love with. All right, I think we got to get going, man. Thank you so much, Ian Cohen, for appearing on this podcast and memorializing our probably favorite TV show of all time.
Awesome. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.